Welcome back to the Bonfire Podcast, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with those closest to the fight game. I am your host, longtime MMA reporter and MMA junkie senior reporter, Mike Bond. It is award season here on the Bonfire. We are looking to wrap up things for 2025 in the UFC and mixed martial arts and look ahead a little bit to 2026 with some of our biggest wishes. Joining me to hand out some hardware will be none other than UFC reporter Megan O'Leary, one of our favorites here on the program, and a bit of a tradition we are forming here, not only with me and Megan handing out the awards, but also with the Fighter of the Year on the male side, how I went about giving out that award. It was once again the anonymous 100-person vote. I mentioned this, that I was thinking about doing it when I had Luke Thomas on a few weeks ago. We went forward. I reached out to all the people, did all the legwork, 100 voters for the male fighter of the year, and we will see how it shakes out. I will give you the breakdown in voting rankings from number 5 to number 1. It's a lot of fun. Personally, in my opinion, I don't know if there's a more prestigious award out there in terms of the people who are voting for it. Yeah, the outlets, a big deal to get something like MMA Junkies Fighter of the Year, obviously has a lot of prestige with that, but the people I reached out to, the people that are on this voter list, I'm not kidding with you guys when it says it is the who's who of our sport and people with the greatest minds and who know this game inside out. I'll give a little more insights on that when Megan and I get to that portion of the show. A lot to come here, a big one as we close out 2025 here, maybe one more show on the tail end. We will see, working on something to try to sneak in at the very end of the year. But if this is it, very thankful for everyone's following, support of the show this year. It has been a big one for us, and we're trying to make this as big as we can and push forward into 2026. So please help doing so with a like, follow, subscription, comment, share it with a friend. Anything you can do to help push the algorithm and the support behind the show truly means a lot. It would be no better holiday or Christmas gift, New Year's gift, whatever you want to call it. It would be very meaningful to me. But for now, I will stop rambling. We will get into the awards. On the other side of the break, Miss Megan O'Leary. We are back here on the Bonfire for a semi-final edition of the year. I think we'll have maybe one more show, Megan, but had to do our awards before Christmas, before the big holiday break, before the new year here. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. It's always, you know, such an honor to be on the Bonfire. And I feel like this is our thing. Like, I feel like this is like a special bond for us.
Yes, no, I've said it from the very beginning. First time I had you on, us doing kind of a mid-year awards thing for MMA Junkie really inspired me to do this, all the great feedback. So we'll always shout you out, and you're always the person I think of. And I think last year we kind of skipped the end of year awards because we were so looking forward to everything to talk about for this year that was to come. So it'll be good to actually look back a little bit. And you kind of know it off camera. Interesting year for you, of course, because you were on maternity leave for a big portion of this, but I assume you were obviously following a lot that was going on.
Oh, yes. I had a very newborn baby watching Dustin Poirier and Max Holloway, you know, in my pajamas, just like, okay, welcome to this world, baby. It was definitely a different type of year, but an amazing year for sure.
Yeah, and as I let the people know in the intro a little bit, we're going to be doing a few awards here. The big unveil for Male Fighter of the Year, which is going to be the revealing of the 100-person vote I did. And then we're going to give some wishes away for 2026 of what we want. So, yeah, it's a lot to get through here, Megan. I guess we'll just go right into it. Are you ready?
I think so. But, like, here's the thing is everybody always has, like, an opinion on what we say on these shows. So I think I'm ready, but we'll see. Comments, I guess, will tell us.
Hey, this is entirely opinion-based, especially with some of these awards. I mean, there's so many great candidates, and any way you want to go with it, I don't think there's too much judgment to be cast. I'm going to save the Male Fighter of the Year for the end, so let's start with some of the fight-related awards here. Let's start at Knockout of the Year for 2025. I will give you the floor. What did you have?
Okay, so it's funny because I saw some of the stuff that you sent over, just some preliminary stuff to look at, and I don't think my choice was even on it. Wow. But I'm going with Jiří Procházka over Khalil Roundtree because that fight was so bananas, and then we were sitting octagon side for that. I'm not necessarily octagon side for every fight, but just the way that went down, that's my pick for Knockout of the Year, but... you know, the Mauricio Rufi fight was a close second for me over Bobby Green. But I'm going with Jiří over Khalil because I just thought the fight in general was amazing. And then the way it ended, it just kind of shifted momentum so much. And, you know, just the experience of the four of us sitting octagon side and just kind of how we reacted and then reacted with one another. That's one that definitely stood out for me this year.
Yeah, that was unbelievable. I was cage side for that as well. Just seeing Yuri being so frustrated in like the early portion of the fight, and he's like, knowing yes. I can do this, but it just wasn't happening for him. And then something clicked for him in that third round, and oh my gosh, what a rally, what a knockout. And yeah, unbelievable moment for Yuri. A little prelude, he did some very good work this year. I mean, had a great third round finish of Jamal Hill to open the year, and then caps it off with Khalil. A great year for Yuri Prochazka. That was a very high level knockout. That was one I considered. Yeah, it was not on the shortlist that I sent you for some reason. I don't know why, but it was not my pick. My pick was the one that you mentioned there, Mauricio Hufi against King Green at UFC 313. It kind of take it back to a similar thing. I try to just look through these. There's so many finishes and so many knockouts we see. It's like, what sticks with you, you know, and like, what do you really remember? I remember being cage side. That happened right in front of us on our side on press row where the kick landed.
Yeah,
just violent the way King Green fell there. What a knockout.
I think also Ilya versus Charles is worth mentioning as well, right? That was a big one. And Charles is so beloved that I think it also kind of resonated with people. So yeah, there's so many amazing knockouts. This whole show is going to be so difficult because it's week after week, whether it's a big card or small card, new names or older names, like there's so many incredible performances. It's just hard to keep track sometimes.
Yeah, I know. As I said to you, I think on the first time we did this, the criteria I kind of like to use for these things are the three S's, the stakes, style, and significance. And I think that kind of what packages it in. And yeah, definitely the stakes for Yuri on your side were a lot higher than Hufi versus Green. So that changes that a little bit. But yeah, great knockouts. Some other ones that I had just on the short list here to give them their shout. Malky Costa against Morgan Cherrier from just recently, Bo Nickel against Rodolfo Vieira with that crazy head kick. Quillian Silkild versus Nasrat Haqparast with that crazy head kick. Diego Lopez versus John Silva, spinning back elbow. Lerone Murphy versus Aaron Pico, spinning back elbow. That one was
That
was high up there. That was probably my number two or number three.
Yes. That's definitely top three for sure.
Yeah, Muslim Salikov versus Carlos Leal was an incredible one. Marc-Andre Barrial versus Bruno Silva was very scary. Silva being taken out on the stretcher in that one. Randy Brown, Nicholas Dalby, and very early in the year, Cesar Almeida had a very vicious knockout of Abdul Razak Al-Hassan that was very scary.
Yes. Great list there.
Upon knockouts. It's hard to discriminate, but the spinning back elbow definitely was a highlight of the year. I mean, we didn't mention, who was it? Carlos Prochas on that one either in his fight with Jeff.
Carlos Prochas, man. Human highlight also.
Wow. So many great knockouts. That's that was one of the tougher ones, I think, for me, honestly.
No, I agree. And I feel like there can be a show on just that topic alone, that there were so many great ones and so many, even on that list, that was, you know, pretty voluminous that we weren't even included as well.
Yeah. So I think the UFC has put out a best knockouts of the year highlight reel on its YouTube channel. So for the people, go check that out. These are probably all in there. Okay. So that puts a bow on that. Congratulations to on your side or my side, Mauricio Hufi, and on your side. What a great finish there as well. So, okay, let's go into submission. Do you want me to go first on this?
Yeah, you go first on yours.
Okay, this one was tougher for me too. I ultimately went, and he's probably going to be getting a lot of shout outs today, Merab Dvalishvili against Sean O'Malley at UFC 316. That was a great choke. Unexpected, I think, was the big thing there too. We know Merab, he had not got any finishes in his title fights, and he goes out there, put Sean away in the rematch. You know, shows he has that layer to his game as well. And yeah, to do that and kind of put a stamp on things, I think huge for him. And as I said, stakes, style, significance, I mean, doesn't get much bigger than a UFC title fight against one of the biggest names on the roster. So that was Merab for me.
I love that one. I think obviously that had to be in the running for me. Ultimately, though, I went with a different selection. I actually went with Sean Brady over Leon Edwards. I feel like, again, what you talk about, the three S's, I mean, the stakes were very high. This was a former champion. You know, Sean Brady took this fight. It was kind of a unique matchmaking situation earlier in the year for that welterweight division. He takes this fight on shorter notice, you know, flies across the pond, has a new baby, and he has to go out there and prove himself. And he did. And I think, you know, Leon Edwards has proven to be such a tough out. Obviously, the guy held the belt for a reason. And Sean Brady just had such a beautiful guillotine choke there that's who I'm going with.
Yeah, that's a great choice. We'll note, for if it was overall MMA and not just a UFC only selection, I would give a big shout out to Costello Van Steenis for his victory over Johnny Eblen in PFL. That was an incredible comeback, last minute submission. That probably wins it for overall MMA, but UFC, great choice there as well. Some of the other names I had on my short list here were Yaroslav Amosov against Neil Magny just recently. Armin Sarukian defeats Dan Hooker. Charles Oliveira against Mateusz Gamrot. Benoit St. Denis against Mauricio Huffy. This one was probably my number two, Anthony Hernandez versus Roman Dolidze. That one was, yeah.
That's my number two. Yep.
What I mean, just shout that one out for a second. I know it maybe doesn't get the love because it happens at the Apex or whatever, but that was a breakout performance from Hernandez and vicious stuff.
Exactly. And I do think that sometimes could be a hindrance in just in terms of how people view it. And I think sometimes Fluffy isn't given the, I think, respect of his skill set and the danger that he has, both in terms of his submission and his grappling and his striking, that he really deserves. So I think that kind of performance and just visually, right? You've got Fluffy Hernandez versus Roman Dolidze. I mean, for him to go out there and secure a finish in that way, he just continues this ascent within the division that I think is going to be really interesting also to watch in 2026 and just kind of what matchups are made with him and where he can continue to leapfrog, you know, closer to the belt, because ultimately I know that's his goal. But I think you're right, when they're held in a certain atmosphere, or, you know, they air in a certain way, maybe people aren't giving it the attention that it necessarily deserves. That was my number two. I thought it was an incredible performance, but I've been impressed with Fluffy all year long.
Yeah, so impressive. It's tough. I know in 2026, they're going to try to get some more fans and stuff into the Apex, but those are the moments where the crowd reaction and or lack thereof definitely takes away a little bit of something. So it just is what it is at this point. But yeah, Fluffy Hernandez, big 2026 lineup for him. I mean, Sean Strickland, that's probably a title eliminator in Houston, February 21st. Are we going to be able to publish any pre-fight content from this? I think it's going to be a record for F-bombs between two opponents in any interviews or any media. Like, it's going to be crazy.
That's a great point. That is a really good point. Yeah, like it's like, two. Oh, hey, Paramount, we're new here. Sorry about the cursing.
Yeah, I think when you put interviews with either of those guys up on YouTube, they just get like demonetized or partially demonetized instantly before you even publish them. It's just...
That's so funny. I didn't even think about that, but that's hilarious. That's very true.
Literally, I'll never forget one time I was at Extreme Couture and saw the schmo trying to interview Sean Strickland, knowing this, and he opened the interview saying, I'll give you $100 if you can make it through this interview without dropping an F-bomb. And he said, F your $100 right off the bat. And just went for it. So that's Sean.
What do
for
we
you.
Do for a living? This is insane.
I know. It's ridiculous. So yeah, great finish for Fluffy. He set up big there. A couple other ones. I had John Silva over Bryce Mitchell at UFC 314. Sean Brady against Leon Edwards. It's so interesting. These most of our award winners had a great start, won their award, and then lost towards the tail end of the year. Sans Yuri, he got his big win there. But some of these other names, Gabriel Bonfim defeats Chaos Williams, and Islam Makhachev did what we had to do against Hanato Moicano there to start the year with a title fight submission. So those are our submission of the year nominees and winners. Congrats to all those names. Good stuff here. Lots of submissions, actually. As I was talking to Dean Thomas recently, I think last week, if you had to guess, Megan, how many title fights in 2025 do you think more ended by knockout or submission? I kind of alluded it, but...
Well, yeah, I mean, now I'm going to say submission, but I don't think I would have, I don't think that would have, in all honesty, been my actual guess.
Yeah, I think it was 4-3, and then the rest were decisions, so.
Wow.
Yeah, interesting stuff there, and two of those happened on the night Marab submitted Sean O'Malley, the other was Kayla Harrison against Julia.
Yeah. Yep.
That puts a bow on that. Okay, fight of the year, Megan. This is an interesting one as well. I was a little bit torn. I'm going to throw it back to you for this one. You give us your opener for 2025 fight of the year.
Listen, You guys know I love the flyweights. So, of course, my choice is Royval versus Van. That fight was bananas. And the fact that they can put 125ers on the map, get the attention of the world, show them what they're made of. This is a weight class that has always been full of talent, but doesn't always get the recognition that they deserve or the platforms that they deserve. And to be able to see performances like that, the passion, the way people reacted to it in a big arena, that for sure is my fight of the year. Yes, there's a little bit of personal bias on there because I'm a big supporter of the Fly Guys, but that one is my fight of the year. But again, so many worthy contenders.
We are unanimous for the first time today, Megan. Fight of the year as well. Yeah, Joshua Van versus Brandon Royval, UFC 317. A few statistics from that incredible fight. Van and Royval combined for 419 significant strikes landed, the most ever for a three-round UFC fight. Their 419 significant strikes landed, the most ever in a flyweight fight, and Van landed 215 significant strikes. Royval landed 204, the first time in a UFC fight ever where both fighters landed 200 plus significant strikes. So a historic fight there.
It's the best. It's the best. We got it. We shout out to the flyweights. I just absolutely love it. Setting records, entertaining the masses. Bravo.
Yeah, crazy. And you would think after a fight like that, it'd be like, you got to take a significant period of time off afterwards. Joshua Van went on to win a UFC title, albeit in dubious fashion. And then Royval got another main event in. So yeah, big time stuff. Huge year for flyweight, and what a close to the year, particularly for that weight class. It was incredible. Some other candidates here. Piotr Jan against Merab Dvalishvili at UFC 323. I'm going to butcher the names here. You can help me if you want. You might not know. Adriana Lumi Martinetti against Mark Volgodin from the Contender Series. That was a ridiculous fight that I was cage side for at the Apex. Dana White bonused them both, signed them both, send them both straight to the hospital. That was a wild fight to witness live. Diego Lopez versus John Silva up there. Chris Duncan versus Mateusz Rebecki. That was a insane fight at the UFC Apex. Yep. Big shout outs to that one. That was higher up on my list. Daniel Rodriguez versus Kevin Holland. Van versus Royval, of course. Marco Tullio versus Trayshawn Gore was a good one. Justin Gaethje against Rafael Fiziev, UFC 313. Oh. Jared Cannonier versus Gregory Rodriguez. And then this was probably my number.
Oh,
two.
Yes.
Yeah. Merab Dvalishvili versus Umar Nurmagomedov at UFC 311. That was
very, a great one. Yep. Started off the year really, really interesting for the bantamweights. And again, that could be, you know, a unique rematch as well.
Yeah. Merab, two fight of the year contenders in there. One loss.
Yeah.
It goes to show what a freaking
very telling.
First title fight of the year and last title fight of the year, if you actually count up.
Yeah, great point.
That's pretty cool as well. Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like the fight of the years are becoming trickier and trickier as time goes on. I don't know if it's because we're just getting more like definitive finishes and things like that, where the fights themselves don't stick out. I don't know what it is. Do you have any thoughts or opinions on that?
I just think that sometimes it's also, there's recency bias, which we talk about all the time, but I also think things get lost in the shuffle. Like, I need to do a better job of keeping records of like, hey, I loved this fight and go back and watch it at the end of the year, or I loved this submission, or this was really impressive. I need to do a better job of that. I already do it, but not in as detailed form, excuse me, as would be helpful. Yeah. And I think sometimes things get lost in the shuffle. There's sometimes we have the Ultimate Fighter airing, we've got Contender Series, and we have a fight every weekend, and things can get lost, and that's unfortunate. And so I think just doing a better job of being able to like single things out and remember them and why, I think would be really important in 2026.
Yeah, for sure. So we'll see how that goes. Okay, those are our three awards there, Megan. We're going to go into some more individuals now. We'll start with a female fighter of the year. I have a gut feeling we might be unanimous on this one as well, but let's throw it to you first. Who is your female fighter of the year?
We're going to me?
Yes.
Okay, this was a difficult one. And I always actually think that this one is difficult, but I am going with Kayla Harrison.
Wow, okay.
Yes, because Kayla came from another organization. We obviously saw what she was able to do when she came over last year. But her combat sports life has been going on for so long that many athletes at this point would be burnt out. They wouldn't want to do such a massive weight cut. They wouldn't want to, I mean, she has to walk for like 6 miles every day and be on these insane diets. Not everyone would want to show that level of discipline, and not, she doesn't need to be clear. And then to go out there and finish Juliana in a rivalry that had some really interesting back and forth verbally, and prepare herself for what is ultimately the toughest test in women's combat sports history, and that's Amanda Nunes, and say, like, I want this. I want to take it on, and not shy away from it, and not even say, hey, I want to have the holidays because I've deserved it. Nope, she's going full blast right into that, you know, kind of, I'm sure, not having any sort of Christmas or meal, that is. So Kayla Harrison overall is my choice for the representative of the sport that she is, who she's been over these years, and why she has, you know, continued to show dominance within the sport.
Yeah, and she showed up. She made history, of course, you know, winning that title. That has been the long elusive goal for her, and yeah, did it in a big fight against Pania. So yeah, I could see the choice for sure. She set herself up huge. I just had to go in a different direction. I did think you were going to join me in Valentina Shevchenko.
Yes.
With her massive year. I mean, she starts it off against Manon Fiorot. Have a lot of questions about where she's at coming off the Alexa Grasso trilogy. We had spent so much time of her career just with that one opponent. How is it going to look against someone different who hadn't lost in the UFC yet? And she did a great job shutting Fioro down. And then, of course, goes into what was touted as one of the biggest women's MMA fights ever against Zhang Weili, and didn't make it feel as such because she was so damn dominant. She kind of dimmed the light off her excitement from that fight. But I think that just emphasizes her greatness in winning that fight in the way she did.
And I think the same thing that we say about Kayla must be said about Valentina as well. Just her dedication to her craft. She's kind of climbed every mountain that there is, especially then with that Weili fight that she just had. You know, she's had every accomplishment in the book, but she continues to find some sort of motivation every day to not just go out there and compete, not just win, but try and, you know, evolve her game, try to make that whatever her skill set is even more improved from the last outing. This is someone who, you know, we know her outside of camp as the most friendly, lovable woman. And then when she is dialed in, she's dialed in. I mean, she is somebody who's on that focus doesn't fade. It doesn't matter what the background is. If she's preparing for a fight, that is all she is looking at. It's that laser focus, that tunnel vision. And so I think she also has to really be applauded for that. I think the two of them are just incredible representatives for women's MMA in this day and age.
Yeah, both of them incredible. And I don't know, we could be shaping up to maybe a UFC White House fight between them or some sort of meeting. Both of them are expressing interest. Things could be headed there. Obviously, Kayla Harrison has a massive bit of work to do first before we go to that.
Yeah. But
that would be a huge fight for the sport. Well, you threw me a bit of a curveball there, Megan. I did.
Sorry.
I would be unanimous. Valentina was my choice, and I did reach out to her, letting her know it would be such, and she did send a reaction, so I'm going to play that for us now, Megan.
I'm very happy to accept this award as Best Female Fighter of the Year. Being martial artist for a long time, competing in top-level competition for many years, it means a lot to me. Finish in 2025, very strong. Best pound-per-pound female fighter, 11 successful title defenses, adding 10 rubies to my championship belt. I want to wish everyone very Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. See you everyone in 2026.
There we go.
That's amazing. The fact that you got her to do that and the fact that she gave such a beautiful acceptance speech.
Bravo. Yes.
Doesn't do anything half-assed. Like, that was amazing.
I know, and I was expecting maybe some guns, or maybe, I don't know where she is. She's traveling somewhere, but I appreciate her giving a shout, and I have a feeling she'll be getting more of those awards, but no, I love the Kayla Harrison shout, and again, we're just lining it up here, Megan. We're setting up the fight even more for 2026, but
exactly.
It's going to be a huge year for women's MMA. We'll see where that goes. I mean, I just saw Amanda Nunes post this week a photo of her training, very rare glimpse into her training camp, but she had her arm around Larissa Pacheco, who of course has fought Kayla Harrison three times, famously. Handed her only loss. So there's a lot going on here, and they were very respectful at the press conference we had, but we'll see what happens come fight week.
Oh, I cannot wait for the fight week. I mean, there's so much to look forward to when it comes to that particular fight week, but that matchup in general and the way they're going to interact with each other, I feel like we're all going to be, you know, kind of having that magnifying glass out, you know, like what did she say? What did she mean? And I mean, they're two of the truest professionals there are, both inside and out of the octagon. So much to look forward to for that one in early 2026.
Do you think speaking of women's MMA, do you think we get a Ronda Rousey fight of any kind in 2026, whether it's boxing or MMA?
You know what? I don't know. And, you know, Ronda was my girl. We worked together so much when she was with the organization. I feel a debt of gratitude to her, because if she didn't, you know, allow me the space to have all those interviews with her, I don't know if my career would have evolved in the same manner in which it did. So I hope that if Ronda wants to have a fight, that she has whatever fight she wants and does it to the best of her abilities. And I hope if she just had two kids and it was like, I want to remind myself I'm a badass, that's what she's doing as well. I fully support it. But I think the Ronda narrative, the Gina Carano narrative, like, you know, everybody's getting back in the gym and they're throwing us these little crumbs. It's like, what is going on? But, you know, no matter what it is, these are women that have paved the road for so many, you know, in the octagon, but also in the sports world in general. So whatever they want to do, I fully support it.
Yes, I'm very curious to see how this plays out. Like you said, the little nuggets are there. I think the Ronda Rousey versus Katie Taylor thing was smoke and mirrors, so we'll see what happens. I think the Gina thing is more real than a lot of people are making it out to be. So we should.
Oh, Mike, it feels like you know something.
We're working. Hey, Megan, you're out there. You don't see Gina Carano walking the streets. She's out there at Syndicate training. It seems like quite a bit. So maybe you'll bump into her and you can get the scoop for us next time.
All right, fair.
Okay, so here we go, Megan. I think this is the main event of the awards here. Male Fighter of the Year. This is a big one. I went through a very tedious, arduous process for this. I will give you some insights to how I did this. I broke down a top five that I thought were the top five candidates based on, you know, my judgment, what other people out there were saying. I tried to keep the people I reached out to as impartial as possible. No one who's the direct manager of any of the candidates, coaches, direct teammates, training partners, anyone who I'd expect like a very biased response from, or, you know, expected answer. So that was a big thing. People who did submit their votes, I will not name names. This is anonymous, but there is a mix of active fighters, retired fighters, UFC Hall of Famers, analysts, coaches, media from five different continents, YouTubers, people of positions of power from various organizations, and even a few celebrities. I'll leave that tease there too.
You know, I just really enjoy that you're kind of name dropping without name dropping. You're like, look how many cool people I know, but I'm so cool that I'm not even going to tell you who they are. I respect that so much right now.
it comes with an anonymous tag, and I will keep everyone's, you know, identity anonymous there, and appreciate everyone responding to me. I did not expect all the responses I got. You throw some flyers out there, some people I knew for sure, but yes, so I will get to it now. The five candidates that we had in place were Yuri Prohazka, who went 2-0 this year with wins over Jamal Hill and Khalil Roundtree, as we discussed earlier. Piotr Jan, who went 2-0 with wins over Marcus McGee and a bantamweight title win over Mirab Davalishvili. Islam Makhachev, who went 2-0, lightweight title defense to start the year against Renato Moicano, welterweight title win against Jack Del Maddalena later in the year. Mirab Davalishvili, who went 3-1, defending that belt three times, Umar Nurmagomedov, Sean O'Malley, Corey Sandhagen, and then losing it at the end of the year to Piotr Jan, and then Joshua Van, who went 4-0 this year with wins over Ray Saruya, Bruno Silva, Brandon Royval in the fight of the year that we both agreed on, and then his flyweight title win, however unfortunate, for Pantoja at UFC 323 there. So those were the five names, Megan. I will also say this. So as I reached out to people, there was some extra names that some people chose to throw in or say this person should have been in the top five or this or that. So I'll throw a couple of those extras that I got out there. Someone shouted out Ilya Topuria to be as high as number two. Someone had Valentina Shevchenko at number two and number one, saying she should have been fighter of the year regardless of gender. Someone shouted out Nassourdine Imavov should have been a top five. Someone had Waldo Cortez Acosta as high as three after his 4-1 year. Michael Morales got a shout for fifth. Kevin Vaheos got a shout for fourth. Melky Costa got a shout for fifth. And Rainier de Ridder, also with his 4-1 year, got a shout for fifth as well. And John.
Love all those additions. Who was the last one?
One vote for John Pork at fifth.
John Pork. I love it.
Yes.
I love it. I was talking to Islam in our meeting about that. And then Daniel and John are like, what are you saying? And then I sent them the clip.
Yes.
John Pork. That's actually amazing.
You introduced them to the meme.
I sure did. They were like, what?
Okay, Megan, so drum roll here as we get into the top five. So coming in at fifth place with a total of 70 fifth place votes, 21 fourth place votes, 5 third place votes, 3 second place votes, and even 1 first place votes, it is Jiří Procházka, who had his 2-0 year. No title fights in there, but a very solid one. I thought he was the pretty clear number five choice there, so I was not surprised, and the voters overwhelmingly agreed with him at number five there.
We had to just shout out the fact that Jiří Procházka also dressed up as St. Nicholas.
Yes.
And did some visiting with that, so I think that was amazing. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, check his social for that. That was great stuff. Number four here with 6 fifth place votes, 27 fourth place votes, 42 third place votes, 20 second place votes, and 5 first place votes. It was Piotr Jan, the UFC bantamweight champion there, who kind of snuck it in. I think obviously the Merab win, maybe the performance of the year, one of the greatest showings we saw, but the Marcus McGee one, you know, not the highest ranked guy. I think he was 12 or something like that. Didn't finish him. I think that hurts him a little bit. So.
But I mean, overall, life-changing year certainly for him. And I mean, he seemed even better than the champion we knew of Piotr Jan. You know, in that performance, it was like, this guy looks unbeatable at this point in his career. And it was just, we don't often see people who have once held the belt come back in the way in which he did and then have a performance like that against a machine like Merab. So bravo to him for sure.
Absolutely. And I think, as you said there, what he showed in that performance was great fight IQ, great discipline, knowing how to follow the game plan that they laid out. And you compare that to the guy who lost his UFC title for one of the worst fight IQ moments that we ever saw, and kneeing Aljamain Sterling in the head. It just once again shows the evolution and how this guy turned the corner. So shout out to Piotr Jan. Yeah, he got his 5 first place votes there, so there was some love for him at the least. Edging him out slightly though for that third place spot with 18 fifth place votes, 36 fourth place votes, 27 third place votes, 13 second place votes, and 6 first place votes, it was Joshua Van, the UFC flyweight champion, who did get some love for number one for his 4-0 year. But I think the consensus was, you know, the fact that the way he won the title, some of the guys being, you know, lower in the rankings to start off the year, that kind of hurt him there.
But to be in your early 20s and to have not just the success to be able to call yourself a champion now, but to have a year like he did, where he was so active, putting on these incredible performances. We talk about the Roy Vall fight, and it, you know, that wasn't one of two fights that he had this year. It's unbelievable determination and, you know, cardio, really. His preparation is off the charts for things. He said he never did more cardio ever than ever before for Pantoja. And so I just think the sky's the limit for him to be so young in the sport and have such an ever-evolving skill set. God, I wish I was 24.
Yes, I think we both do. Do you think, what do you think they're going to do here? Are they going to turn him around and book him an early title fight against Manel Kopp while Pantoja heals? Or is it only right where, despite Joshua being young and very eager to compete often, does he kind of got to wait and let the man heal?
No, I mean, I think that's a really good question. I think it all comes down to how long is Pantoja out? What's the extent of the damage? What does the healing process look like? And not just the healing process. How can he, you know, make sure he's 100% and then do a full training camp? Because he was the champion for so long. He's one of the best to ever do it. He deserves that. He deserves to be able to fully prepare after that extended injury, in whatever manner that looks like. And also, Pantoja might want a break too. This is a guy who's constantly fighting. He's constantly helping his teammates over there at American Top Team. He might just say, like, okay, this happened. I'm going to rehab to the best of my abilities, and then I'm going to take a deep breath and start camp. He's got kids, you know, who knows where this is. So I think that it's not just about Josh and what do we do with him. It's kind of the extent of things for Pantoja. That respect is certainly deserved by him. And then we see. But if I know Josh Van, like I think I do, I think he'd probably say yes to fighting in January if they asked him. Not that they're going to.
Well, he wants to fight March or February 21st in Houston, and Manel Kaplan is doing everything and more to try to get that fight. So we'll see what happens there. So yeah, Joshua Van in at number three. Okay, the suspense is about to end here for second place with 5 fifth place votes, 8 fourth place votes, 13 third place votes, 41 second place votes, and 33 first place votes. It is Islam Makhachev, the UFC welterweight champion, leaving number one with 1 fifth place vote, 4 fourth place or 7 fourth place votes, 14 third place votes, 23 second place votes, and 55 first place votes. So over half the voters had Merab Dvalishvili, former champion, at number one for Fighter of the Year. He wins the award there, Megan. Thoughts on the voting there and the breakdown for number two and number one?
I think that for me personally, but I think any, you know, real MMA fan out there would have probably a similar tough task between the two of them. Who's one and who's two? Different reasons for different accomplishments. And you know, you can kind of give an explanation for both being first place, but Merab attempted to do something that nobody had successfully done in 4 title defenses successfully in a single calendar year. And the way in which he competes is just mind blowing. I will say I talked to Merab. We actually filmed a new episode of my podcast a couple of days after the fight, and he was in really great spirits, and that was amazing to see. You know, he wasn't broken by that. He just said, "Oh yeah, now it's time for a trilogy." So I appreciate so much that mindset as well. But if I could change anything for Merab, it would be please stop doing your weight cuts the way you do them. And then Islam just being asked, you know, this was how I was kind of breaking them down. Being asked to fight Renato Moicano, it was not like a, oh, okay, well, he's not as dangerous. No, that's even harder. You're not just asking Renato to step up into that position. You're asking Islam to completely throw out whatever preparation he had done and face a brand new opponent that he wasn't even thinking about for the entirety of this camp. And then when he fights Jack, he's going up to 170. This is a weight class where many didn't think that he would even, you know, stay to compete. And now it's like, why would he ever go back to 155? I even before the fight was like, yeah, I'd like to see him go back down. Well, why? He puts on a clinic against Jack Della Maddalena, who is an unbelievably talented mixed martial artist. And I just think the two of them are, you know, it's 1A and 1B for me as to who could be first for Fight of the Year of 2025.
It is a really tricky one, and I see both arguments. I mean, you want to give Islam his moment, and you know, in the sun where he became such a rare champion, he aspires to do it in 2 weight classes, but you know, Merab did the rarest of the rare, and it's always weird giving it to a guy coming off a loss. I know it was different. I think Alex Pereira got it in 2022 when he lost to Adesanya early in the year by knockout, and then I think went up and won the light heavyweight title the same year, but it was flipped around. But again, this was my talking point on Pereira, who I voted for last year. You get 3 title defenses in a calendar year. Like, you got to give it to the guy. If Merab did not fight, if he didn't fight Piotr Jan and just said, I'm done after the Sandhagen win in October, like, I think this is not even a conversation. It's clearly him.
That's a fair point. That's definitely a fair point. And also, I mean, it wasn't like he was not competing in that fight in December. So it's also important to remember as well. And sometimes you just don't get your hand raised on that given night. But it doesn't take away from the effort and the talent that's there as well. So as you know, Marab told me, and I'll say this, I'm also looking forward to the trilogy whenever that may happen.
Yeah, of course. I think it's the fight you got to do. Dean Thomas said very rarely on the podcast last week, UFC owes this one to Marab for everything he did. And yeah, not often that he could say the UFC owes someone, but I do think in this scenario, I probably agree with that. What about Islam? What do you want to see from him in 2026? Are you down for this Kamaru Usman fight, or do you want to see him fight like a young, undefeated, hungry contender, as there's many of in this division?
You know what? At first, wasn't super into the Kamaru idea just when it all happened. And then as I started kind of thinking about it, it's like, you know what? That makes sense. And I'll watch any matchup. I'll be excited by any matchup, especially seeing how he continues to compete at 170. I'm not sure that I was totally on board, but now I get it. But I think there's so much at play. Once again, we've talked about 170. I love that weight class. There's so many exciting new fighters. There's so many personalities that just in terms of, you know, lead up into fights will be so exciting. I think that throughout 2026, whoever they put Islam with and however they make these number one contender bouts will be, can't miss television. And I'm very excited about that. But in terms of what's next for Islam, I think it doesn't really matter because people tune in to watch him and his style of fighting. But this is a guy whose personality just continues to shine with every outing as well. And people get to know him more and more, which is really fun for us who do these interviews. Whoever it may be, I just hope it's sooner rather than later. That would be my preference.
Yeah, we'll see if he gets one in before Ramadan or if we have to wait till after. But yeah, I agree. I think I said it last year. Islam, I think, is the biggest star in the UFC globally, in my opinion, right now. And people will say maybe Ilia Topuria, but the numbers, at least from what I see, show that on that side. So, okay, Megan, that puts a bow on our awards. What a segment, what a journey that was. I'm looking forward to not having to annoy all the people I annoyed for this until next year. Maybe it'll be a clear race. Honestly, I wasn't planning on doing this until Marab lost. I thought he was going to win going in. I picked him to win, and I was like, oh, this will be easy. And then Piotr Jan changed the game. So that was that. Last thing I told you to do, Megan, before we get to our quick 2026 wishes here, a personal moment for you that stood out the most in 2025. I know maybe it would be the time off and giving the birth to your child, but if it was work related, I don't know, anything you want.
Well, if I have to go work related, I would say working a pay-per-view 10 days before I gave birth. That to me was an incredible accomplishment, but also something really fun to be able to show Vito, hey, like, you were in mom's belly when we were watching these fights. And just kind of the reception that I was able to get from women was really rare and super beautiful and meaningful for me. The end of pregnancy is really, really difficult physically. And to kind of get, you know, some attention for being able to do that, and still memorize stuff and wear 6-inch heels and everything and put the athletes first, even though, you know, I was like waddling around, it was cool. And to have women say, like, we don't see pregnant women on TV a lot, and we certainly don't see pregnant women in sports very often, if at all. It was meaningful to be able to kind of show people that you can do everything, and to have the support of people like my boss, Zach Candido, and Michael LaPlante, and John Anik, and Dana Cormier, and Joe Rogan, the way they allowed me to continue to work but feel safe about it. And I knew the doctors were there, my husband was there. And so for me, that will forever stay with me. And I'm so grateful I got to do it. And grateful I get to look back and show Vito, and also that I could just maybe show women, hey, we can do everything we want. Our dreams can come true. Motherhood and work can go hand in hand.
Love that powerful message. And as I've said, you're incredible for doing what you've done. And I was in awe of how late in the game you stayed working and how quickly you came back. Shows your love, and you're doing the NFL stuff in between too. So pretty remarkable.
Yes.
Okay, Megan, I know we only have a few minutes time because you are so busy with your NFL life.
I know, here. I'm sorry.
Head to our
2025 Coach Harbaugh is waiting.
Wishes. I will quickly run through. I listened back to our 2025 wish list episode.
Oh, shoot. I should have listened back because I think I have some repetitive ones, but whatever. There's still a dream.
Okay, we'll go. You can double down on your wishes here. Quickly running through yours and then mine. You said, give me either UFC Spain, UFC Hawaii, or UFC Japan. Unfortunately not, but we can keep
dreaming. That's literally my first one on this list. What am I doing?
For a women's atomweight division, which we did not get. You wanted to see some sports Emmy or other award recognition for the UFC production teams related around the sphere. I believe we did get that, right?
They got two. They sure did.
They got that. You wanted to see title shots for Kayla Harrison, Tatiana Suarez, and Khamzat Chimaev, 3 for 3. All those happened. And you wanted to see Islam versus Ilya, did not get that one. And you wanted to see, which I'm sure is going to come up again, something WEC, UFC Hall of Fame related, which I think you might have again, because you were preluding to this being something for the next year. And then you also noted more storytelling. My list was a little different, but here are some ones that I had. Dustin Poirier gets the win in his retirement fight. Did not happen. This was before he was booked. There was any date. I said, I'm giving an unbiased choice here because he does not have an opponent where I'm picking against. But I said that would be a nice moment. I said, bring back old school UFC media days. Did not happen. Khamzat Chimaev fights for a UFC title. Did happen. John Jones versus Tom Aspinall. Did not happen. Induct Demetrius Johnson in the UFC Hall of Fame. That did not happen. And then I asked for three Islam Makhachev fights. We only got two, but I mentioned how one of those should be a welterweight title fight. So boom, we got that one. So, okay, Megan, I don't have as many as last year. We can rip through these a little quicker, but you go first. Give me a 2026 wish for the UFC.
Okay, well, obviously I'm a basic bitch because I still have like some very similar things on my list for this year. UFC Japan has got to come. We used to go to Japan relatively often, or at least a couple of times, and it was a great time. But I would love to see us go to a new locale. So I have Spain or Hawaii still on there. Obviously, very selfish personal reasons as well. Who doesn't want to go to those places? My NFL crew went to Madrid, and I did not work that one because we had our pay-per-view in New York. So still putting Spain there on my bucket list. Then I have Ilya returning soon against whom? I don't know. Arman or Islam are obviously interesting matchups, but I think, with Islam being at 170, that's maybe not something we're going to see at least in the forefront of 2026, maybe later in the year. I don't know. You're right. WC, UFC Hall of Fame. It will be the 25th anniversary of the WC. I will say this, and Mike, I think that you could probably give some perspective to this. I do think it's like, kind of straddles a unique line for the Hall of Fame because we have this pioneers wing and it's athletes who competed in the sport, you know, prior to a certain year. And that's not the WC years. However, I still feel like they are pioneers because without the, you know, featherweights, bantamweights, and now we see flyweights who competed in the WC, those weight classes wouldn't exist in the UFC. So I do think that could be a unique scenario for if they chose to do it. I don't think that they will, even though I will annoy everyone about it in the building. But I do think they straddle kind of a unique line as to which wing they would kind of put those athletes in. More storytelling and awards is certainly on my list. My Becoming a Fighter podcast is coming back in 2026. We've already recorded some beautiful episodes. Spoiler alert, I've cried in every single interview. So has the athlete. So there's lots to look forward to there. And then the heavyweight title fight picture. I just hope that we get a clearer idea of what's happening. We get to see those matchups soon. And then we get to see that division move forward, evolve, continue to gather strength, kind of like that snowball effect. But it's got to start soon in order for that to happen for 2026.
Okay, those are good ones. I like them. The Ilya one will be interesting. I think I'll rewrite that one for you a little bit. Let's say, can we get two Ilya Topuria fights in 2026? Like that, I feel like that would be a wish. One absolutely needs to happen, or if he's not fighting at all, need to have some conversations about who the undisputed lightweight champion will be. But I dig that one. Okay, I guess going off Ilya Topuria, I said I would like to see Armin Sarukian get a title fight in 2026, whenever that may be, obviously deserving. In the same title fight vein, I said my wish, how about no title fights in 2026 end by injury or fouls? That would be...
Please. Number one.
Like that's a good enough one. Things happen, but let's avoid that if at all possible. Give me a first time triple champ opportunity in 2026 for someone. There's five people
in
play.
Who do you think it could be?
There's five people in play. There's Ilya Topuria, There's Alex Pereira. There's Amanda Nunes. Maybe she said she could go to 125. We'll see how realistic that actually is. Islam Makhachev, he'd have to go to 185, which would be kind of crazy as well. And then Conor McGregor is the obviously crazy one, but he is obviously still on the roster, someone who's won belts in two divisions and seemingly will be fighting at 170 and called out Islam. So that's actually probably how I'd rank it in terms of like most to least realistic. So those are my five.
I think that makes total sense. I love the idea of it. How do you feel, I guess, kind of going off of that, how do you feel about now the need to vacate a title before you compete for another title?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like they're sticking to it, at least. I thought if Zhang Weili has to do it, just given, you know, she had beat everyone, there's nothing super interesting in that division. I know Verna deserved her shot, but, like, it seems like they're making everyone do it. So a little bit disappointing, but I don't know. It's weird. I do think it's weird when you're still having two people hold up the belts after the win when they're not the champion. You put Amanda Nunes up there at the press conference with two belts in front of her, and she's not the champion in either division, so there's some weirdness going on with the titles, but I did like no interim title fights in 2025. We are getting one to start off 2026, but maybe that's the only one, hopefully the only one there. So
absolutely.
Last one I had, we're getting some great wishes come true. Earlier start time, no more pay-per-view. These are all good things. I guess
the earlier start time.
Especially as an East Coaster. Oh my Lord. You know this year, OG from the East Coast. And then these ones built into that too, new Paramount era. Want to hear what the new bonuses are going to be, how they're going to change fighter pay, because these are all things Dana White said came with the new Paramount deal. Still waiting for answers, but obviously that's very important to the health of our sport and the security of our athletes.
I absolutely love that. I couldn't agree with you more on that. And I think, you know, obviously you and I care about athlete first, but then, you know, secondary to that in that point was just the fact that we have this new partnership with Paramount. And I think, you know, for us broadcasters, it's really exciting too, to just kind of see how things will continue to evolve. When we went from Fox to ESPN, that's kind of where the reporter role that you see now on a broadcast was kind of created and born and made into what it is now. And so it'll be so interesting to see what we're able to do, you know, at this point moving forward. I think we're all so excited, and we're also really excited to just be able to stay together. You know, the four of us that you've come to know on pay-per-views, we're such a close family, that to be able to continue to do it on a different network this time, is really, really special. And it's not something any of us take for granted. So really looking forward to seeing, you know, what the Paramount era brings and how we can continue to contribute, elevate the sport. And of course, you know, most importantly, give a great platform to our athletes.
Well, that's amazing, Megan. Last time we were on, I know I'd said I was asking multiple people, you didn't know for sure what the future was with Paramount, but I'm seeing Paul Felder say this week he signed a new 5-year deal. Michael Bisping said to me he was close to signing a new 4-year deal. Do you have any news to break with us, or is this just kind of an extension of what's been going on? Or
No, my new deal is almost done, so very exciting.
Amazing, Megan. Congratulations.
Yes. Thank you.
Very well deserved. Well, that's a great bit of breaking news to end off the show here, Megan, and exciting as we look ahead. That's very great. So could not be happier.
I'm grateful.
Awesome Christmas present.
Thank you. Yeah, for sure. Vito, you can have some new toys now.
There you go, Megan. All right. I know you got NFL work to do. So much going on. Appreciate you making the time, Megan. As you said, this is kind of our thing here. So we will do something again in the new year. And yeah, looking forward to seeing you out there as we kick off this Paramount era, January 24th.
We'll see you soon, Mike. Enjoy your first Christmas as a married man.
Thank you so much. That does it for another edition of the Bonfire Podcast. Thank you so much to Megan for her time. That was a lot of fun, and she even gave us a little bit of breaking news there at the end. How awesome was that? And congratulations once again to her. The UFC broadcast would not be the same without Megan's contributions, and of course her insights and her knowledge here mean a lot to me. So appreciate her joining for this awards related show and our 2026 wish list. Give us your thoughts on my Fighter of the Year poll. Did we get our other awards correct? What are your wishes for 2026? Lots to discuss in the comments, and I got plenty of time here in the next couple weeks without fights going on. I'll try to respond and engage with all of you guys over there on any platform, be it YouTube, audio, anything. I try to check it all. So once again, as I said off the top, your loyalty, your support, all the kind words mean a lot. It is very encouraging as we go into a new year that's going to come with challenges, big moments, and more. We're looking to make things big. So for now, until I see you guys after Christmas, for those who celebrate, enjoy if you're just celebrating the holidays in any means you can, spend it with your loved ones, your friends, your family, all that stuff. Tell them what they mean to you. It's never too late. So those are my final parting words there. And until next time, I will see you back here by the bonfire.